Welcome to the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about Tony and her brand new business venture. And one of the things that I like about Tony is that once we document things publicly, she always like blows it up because like she feels the pressure to do it.
I feel so a lot of peer pressure. I don't like to disappoint people. That's because I'm an Enneagram 1. So
I want to start with this first question.
Okay.
You got a lot of stuff already on your plate.
I do.
And adding an e-commerce store to that seems like it just seems like you don't have any time left. Can we comment on that real quick?
Can we? This is such a selfish question because you constantly are like, what do you do all day? Why do you just sit around, play on TikTok? Okay. Well, so I am closing my jewelry business at the end of the year. We're liquidating inventory now. And, you know, that has kind of been, well, you know, this has been a long time coming as far as just feeling.
Did you want to talk about that real quick? Why you're shutting that down?
Well, not okay. 100%.
Not 100%, but you can just give the high level reason.
Yeah. So started jewelry business in 2015. It did very well. But just over time, it's definitely something that I was not passionate about at all. And it wasn't something that so what I've come to realize over the years is the thing that I like about e-commerce is I like the branding. I like the content marketing. Like things I don't like about e-commerce are, you know, importing crap, working with manufacturers. Like that's just not my thing. I mean, I know how to do it and I will do it for a business, but that is not what I like. What I love is crafting the story, selling people on the story. And with the jewelry, I struggled for most of the time in that area. And since that's the area that I'm good at, it just always felt like a rub to me. So for a while when it was doing really well and before we had a ton of competition, because we ended up getting a lot of competition as time went on, which is normal in any e-commerce business, it was like, well, I don't even care about this stuff. It's not jewelry I would wear. And it just became harder and harder for me to handle that part of the business because I felt like a fraud. And when you're selling, like I sell jewelry for essential oils, and the people who use essential oils believe 100% in the power of essential oils, and good for them. I don't. I think of it's like I we won't talk about what I think about it, but I don't want to offend anyone. It's I think it's a personal thing. Like there's people that swear by the keto diet, and there's people that swear by all sorts of things. And to me, it kind of goes in that bucket. Like if it works for you, awesome. Keep doing it. Like, I'm not going to come in and interrupt anything about that in your life. But for me, it became harder to sell it because I didn't believe in it. And I think when you're selling a product that you have that people have to believe in to use, it's like one thing if you sell paper clips, right? Because paper clips are just something they hold paper together. You don't have to believe in it. It just works. But if you're selling a supplement or something like within the essential oils category or fitness type thing, you kind of have to believe that product works if you want to create the brand. Right. The people that work for Nike, like I have a friend that was pretty high up in Nike. She's all in on Nike. Like she just thinks it's the best thing ever. The shoes are amazing. Everything about it is amazing. And so I felt like for me, it just wasn't, I didn't have that. And it just, to me, it was like, you know what? I don't love this enough to keep it going.
Okay. And then I think I asked you this question before, but it'd be nice to just have it on the podcast.
Why
e-commerce and not like another digital sort of business?
Well, I have a couple digital businesses already. I mean, we have this, right? We have Profitable Audience.
Yes, I'm just talking about like the inventory part and all that stuff that you just said you didn't like.
Yeah. So, right. I know. I'm just a constant contradiction. So I don't mind the inventory. I don't mind that. Like, I'm not good at it. I suck at inventory. I'm not like that is not my strength at all. But I also see. I'm a sucker for like a good idea and an opening in the market. And I feel like I have a good idea and there's an opening in the market. And it's something that I'm really excited about. So to me, I'm willing to put up with the stuff that I don't like because there's a lot that I do like.
Okay. That makes sense. I was expecting a different answer.
What were you expecting? I can only do so much with you, Steve.
No, that's... Well, yeah, that was one of the answers. I was thinking that... this is pretty much one of the easiest ways to get into this market that you like, right?
What do you mean?
I can't think of another... producer. Well, why don't we just tell people what the idea is first?
So I'm going to sell motorcycle accessories. So, right. And I would like to over time, like I have enough experience in all of this to know that I'm not going to start selling everything that I want to sell right away. So I've narrowed it down to probably 10 types of products that I want to start selling, but I would love to eventually down the road get into like custom parts for motorcycles, specific types of bikes, which that's way more complicated, right? And that you need a lot more money. And I like businesses that you can start for a couple thousand dollars and just reinvest your profits into the business for the first 6 months, year, 2 years, whatever it is, and then expand down the road to what I think I could really, I don't want to sound too, you always think I'm so cocky, but I do think I could dominate the marketplace in some of this stuff, because to me in the motorcycle world, there's motorcycle enthusiasts, and some of those people get into the business of selling things for motorcycles, but most of those people are not marketers. It's just like whenever you get, you know, have you ever hired a handyman and they come to your house and they do like this amazing work and it's just like so good, but they can never return a phone call. They invoice you on a piece of paper. You're like, you could have like, you could own this niche in your area if you could do 1 ounce of marketing. Just get yourself an ad on Google, right? But they're not marketers, right? They're really good handymen or woodworkers or plumbers, right? And so I feel like in some of these e-commerce spaces, there's people that are super passionate about what they're doing, but they don't understand the nuances of marketing. And I think this is something where I really enjoy motorcycles and riding bikes. I'm not by far an expert, but I am an expert in marketing. So I feel like I can marry those two, and it gives me a little bit of a leg up on some of the competition because I've gotten in their flows. I've been in their abandoned carts. Like I have abandoned carts at like 6 shops right now. I'm just waiting for their emails to hit me, and I'm seeing what they're doing, and they're not doing a bad job, but I think I could do a better job.
Is content going to be a big component
Absolutely.
Of this business? Okay. So in fact, you are, here's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Why are you starting out with the physical products instead of just putting out content first and seeing what people actually want? Or do you already know what people want?
I know the items that don't have a lot of competition right now.
Okay.
I know the medium demand, low competition items. And so I think for me, so I would not recommend this for most people. I would not recommend doing both at the same time. Don't try to build up your content and start an e-commerce store at the same time if you don't have experience doing one or the other. I have experience doing both, so I feel confident I can do them at the same time, because a lot of the hurdles, and we were just talking about this before we started to record, a lot of the hurdles that people have are learning how to sell a product on Amazon, learning how to build a Woo or WordPress or Shopify or big commerce site, right? There's a lot of learning in that, even integrating email forms or pop-ups or abandoned cart flows or one-click upsell, whatever you're going to use. Like all of that stuff I work in every day already. And so for me, like I'm copying my old store basically to the new store. So what would take somebody probably a month to do will take me 2 days. And on the content side, same thing. Like I know how to create content. I've been doing it for a very long time. So while it's probably not going to be super polished content, which is fine, it's not going, I don't have a lot of the same hurdles that someone just starting out does, where we get questions all the time. Well, I don't understand how to build a footer on a WordPress site. Like I don't have those types of questions. Now, there's a lot of things that I've forgotten. Like when I got into Shopify last week and I was like, oh, this has changed and this looks different. And oh, crap, I forgot I need 2 photos for this. And, you know, so there's definitely things that no matter how experienced you are, still take time. But for me, I feel like I can do both well at the same time.
All right. And then since this is a content podcast, let's talk about the content strategy for this. Where are you starting?
So at first I thought, well, so I already have one channel, but I'm actually going to create a different one because I don't want to lose
a channel for what?
I have a YouTube motorcycle channel on Instagram. Sorry. In my mind, I jumped like 8 sentences. So I have an Instagram channel for my own personal motorcycle. I have a really good name on that, but it's not going to be the brand. So I'm going to start a new channel. But you and I have talked a lot. So I'm going to do something with Instagram just because that's where I can easily put up content. But I think YouTube probably needs to be where I start. And I've been doing some research in the past week or so just on what other creators are on YouTube making like motorcycle type videos. And there's basically two main types of videos. It's one, people riding bikes, right, in like really great scenery, and like they're riding through Yosemite or like what I do, ride through the Alps, things like that. Or it's people like educating you on bikes. Like, there's this one guy, his name is absolutely escaping me, but he's got like a million subscribers and he's all education. And he's not much about like riding as far as like where you can ride and things like that. It's like more like, well, this is a technique, or this is how you should brake, or this is the right way to hold the, like he did a whole video on how to hold the throttle, right? And I was like, this is actually really interesting. I don't hold the throttle the right way. So I'm leaning towards the education piece of it, because I actually think those videos people will watch longer, right? Because they want to learn something. And like, while I find the videos of people riding through different areas really interesting, it's also like, after a while, you're like, okay, how many more mountain passes can we look at, or, you know, kind of thing. So I think I need to start with the education side of it, just teaching people things about bikes. And I think what would differentiate me is obviously I'm a female doing this. And also I'm an older female doing this, because a lot of the girls that ride bikes that have like big social followings are young. They're in their 20s. So I'm a little bit different in that, you know, there's a lot of people my age, females, that ride motorcycles, and we have a lot more disposable income than the 25-year-olds. And so I think, but there's not a lot of people on social media that are over 40 that are women doing this stuff. So I think there is a niche. Now, it's not this like massive audience, right? But let's be honest, guys are going to watch it too, because there's something about a girl on a motorcycle that guys just think is amazing.
Yeah, anyone who's listening, I want Tony to do like, she moves the helmet and then swishes her head around.
Yeah,
like
he
that
wants the slow-mo helmet removal and like the head toss and the get off the bike. It's so funny because like, if you ever see me, I'm like, I'm not a tall person. I'm 5'4"-ish. And so I ride a sport bike, and sport bikes are tall, right? So you have an advantage on a sport bike if you have longer legs. I don't have long legs. So for me to get off a bike, there's nothing like sexy or graceful about it. I'm like planting a foot, throwing my leg over, like balancing everything, making sure the kickstand's down. Yeah, it's like I look like a baby elephant. There's nothing attractive about it.
So did you already register geriatricbiker.com?
I did. Okay. Mrs. Geriatricbiker.com.
That's too long. Too many syllables. Did you register the domain yet?
I have like six. I have six registered.
You haven't decided which one?
I'm pretty sure I've decided. I'm not going to reveal it yet. No.
You're not going to reveal it yet.
We'll reveal it. Like, once the website's up, we'll reveal it.
We'll reveal it like once you're all up and running. Yeah. We'll do it on my podcast.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this again.
Yeah. So, but I think the content piece, so for certain brands, and I don't know, because I don't, you live in Eat, Sleep, Breathe e-commerce. You have the other podcasts in the course. I'm not as quite involved in that as you are. But to me, I think there's certain things that lend itself to content marketing. And to me, this is one of them. You know, I think certain things you sell, it really doesn't matter a whole lot with the content. Like, I think you should still be creating it. But for me, this is where I think content will actually translate into sales.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, so you're going to do how-to content, you said, which means that you have a learning curve, right?
Yes.
Earlier you said that you don't...
Not an expert.
Like the world's expert. Yeah, so which aspects of motorcycling are you going to focus on? Like, how are you going to learn enough, and how are you going to feel confident enough to teach this stuff?
Well, is confidence really going to be a factor for me?
No, it's not. You're right. It's not.
So I feel like every time I learn something, I can teach it. Because it's not... it's not rocket science. I mean, there's certain things on a motorcycle that you do, and there's certain things you don't do. And so one of the things that I think is really important is, how do you pick up your bike when you drop it? Because everyone drops their bike. I don't care what you say, who you are, you've dropped your bike. And most of the time, it's like you drop it at a stop sign or something. You stall it out, or you make the turn too slow. Or I saw a video the other day where this girl went to stop and the road was uneven. And so when she put her foot down, the road was like 2 inches lower on that side. So she basically just lost her balance because her foot didn't go where she thought it was supposed to go. And she just like slowly tipped. Like, that happens all the time to people on a hill, whatever. So one of the things that, like, for me is, how do you pick up your bike when your bike weighs 500 pounds and you weigh 125 pounds, right? I mean, most guys don't have a lot of trouble picking up a bike off the ground, but most females do. And so if you're riding by yourself and you drop your bike, like, how do you pick it up? So I think I'm starting with things like that, that would be slightly more specific to like smaller people riding. It doesn't have to be females, but there's a lot of guys that ride that. My son is like not much bigger than me, and he rides a motorcycle. So like real practical stuff like that. Even techniques for like when you stop in traffic, you usually stop directly. You stop very close to the car in front of you because you don't want to be like blind to people. So the closer you are to the car, the less likely someone is to miss you. So there's like little things like that that I do know and I can talk about. And I already have, we use the Insta360 camera mount, which mounts to the bike. So it gets great footage. So you can do a combination of types of videos where some of it's just a video with a voiceover, like, hey, when you're in traffic, or like, where do you ride in a lane? Like, well, depending on what part of the road you're in, like, if you're riding by a road where there's a lot of people coming onto the road, you're going to ride far left, right? But just there's all these little nuances. And as a beginning rider, if someone hadn't have told me that, I would have figured it out. But I figured it out before I got hit, you know, because we all know that cars don't look out for motorcycles. That's just, and so it's, I think, the motorcyclist's job to be as aware and defensive as possible on the road because no one's looking out for you. And that's just the way it is. It's same on a bicycle, right? Same with if you're a cyclist. Unfortunately, it's your responsibility to be the one in charge of your own safety. So I think a lot of stuff like that, I think people would be interested in, and it's not necessarily common knowledge to a beginning rider.
Sure. I'm sure all this stuff has been covered on YouTube already by various people, but for the people listening to this, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the person delivering that information.
Yeah.
And the fact that you serve like a demographic that probably isn't well served, I'm guessing. I'm not on.
It's not for the most part. And I think, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Motorcycle riding is dangerous. But so is skydiving. So is climbing Mount Everest. Like, there's a lot of hobbies that people have that are not the safest things to do. But it doesn't stop people from doing it. So I think there's a lot more people my age that are like, oh, okay, my kids are older. Like, I have more disposable income. Like, I mean, I have two friends that just got their motorcycle license that are over 40. So it's, I think it's something that people, there's a lot of kids that ride bikes for sure. Like, both my boys ride motorcycles, or two of my boys. But I think the older you are, they're the demographic I want because they have the money to spend
absolutely.
On stuff.
Actually, my point for listeners was it doesn't matter if that content's kind of already out there.
Yeah.
It's like your own spin on the content. That's what matters.
Yeah.
And the delivery and who you are.
Yeah.
So because we get a lot of people that say, hey, the content's already out there. I would just be regurgitating what's already out there. But no, it's actually from your point of view. It's your own spin on it.
And I'm 100% positive that this is out there already and probably well done. But it's kind of like.
But are they doing the helmet swish?
That's the main thing. Yeah. Are they wearing all black leathers? Are they throwing their head back out of every video? No, they're not. That's clearly the only way we're going to sell. No. It's like the same thing as my son and I talk about this all the time. You're a big NBA fan. Me too. So is my son. And there's TNT that broadcasts games, and then there's the ESPN network guys, right? And so depending on the night, especially for the playoffs, depending on the night, you get a different group. I hate the ESPN guys. Like, sorry, Jalen, you're not my favorite. But I won't watch the commentary for ESPN because I don't love it. I don't care. I'll like turn the TV off or mute it and go do, you know, 20 minutes worth of work while that's playing. But you better believe I don't miss a second of Shaq and Charles and Ernie and Kenny.
Yeah, those guys are funny.
Yeah. Like, but there's a lot of people that love ESPN commentary, right? So it's just a matter of preference. Like, not everybody resonates with you. So there's YouTube videos where someone is like, yeah, he's not bad, but it doesn't resonate with me, or it's just not something I want to watch. And that's the case. I mean, like, how many people stream video games on Twitch, right? There's lots of big creators and they're all playing the same games, but certain people like the style of somebody and certain people like the style of somebody else. It's just like music. Everyone likes different types of music.
So let's talk about the frequency. How many videos are you going to put out? Are you going to do shorts? What's your Instagram strategy?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm probably going to do the Steve Chu once a week method.
Okay.
I mean, obviously bank some for sure. Like, I'll have some banked and put out, you know, a bunch at once. And then I think once a week is probably doable for me. I will batch record, unlike you.
I do batch record.
Oh, do you? I thought you didn't batch record.
For YouTube?
Yeah.
I got like 5 episodes in the bank.
No. Do you record them all on the same day, though?
Oh, you mean like, no.
Yeah. So yeah. I think for me, I've got to batch record because especially with a bike, and if most of the videos are around riding in the bike, like there's just certain days you don't want to ride, right? Like the hurricane came through here. Well, there was no, I couldn't get the bike out of the neighborhood because the roads were just so full of debris and I don't want to just lay it out on a pile of leaves and sticks and branches that were in the road. Like, and for me, not being like a hugely experienced rider, that's really dangerous. So, you know, I know that there's days when it's pouring down rain, I'm not going to be on the bike. Although I do think like a rain video would be good, like how to brake in the rain, but I don't know how to do that. So like, that's something that I could do at this point in my motorcycle riding journey. So I want to batch record just because that way it's not like, oh my gosh, it's Monday, it's my video day, and you know, it's pouring down rain and, or it's 107 degrees. I don't want to be out on the bike because it is Florida. You know, there's definitely days that are much better to ride than others. So, and I don't ride, like I don't personally ride like during rush hour traffic, things like that. I like to ride in the middle of the day when there's not a lot of cars out because I ride for fun. I have a vehicle that gets me to where I need to go. So when I ride, it's purely enjoyment. And so I'm not going to go ride in bumper to bumper traffic because that's not fun for anybody on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense for you. For me, like I just flip on the camera right behind me.
Yeah.
And I can do it any time during the night because I have lights.
Yeah. So I mean.
So most of your videos are going to be outside then?
I would say most of them. I think there's going to be a mix between how I'm envisioning it right now is a mix between videos where the camera is mounted on the bike, and some like I have a great video of me dropping the bike, right? And it's the camera was actually mounted at the bottom of the bike. So the angle's pretty cool. And you see exactly how the bike went over. Like that would be a great video to use in a voiceover of like what happened, what I did wrong. And I think those videos are actually like to me, I like watching those videos because I'm new and I want to see like, OK, I made a mistake. How do I fix it? And so I think probably 50% of the videos are going to just be voiceovered of.
OK,
obviously, maybe like an intro of me talking like my face, but then. The main part of the video is the Insta360 footage with, if you notice this car coming from this direction, blah, blah, blah kind of thing.
Those videos are actually easier to pull off.
So I think those videos are actually easy to make. The hard videos will be the ones that are, you know, me with a bike talking, like obviously because it's like I don't really want to do it in my driveway, so do we go to a parking lot, like that kind of thing, like that is a little more involved, which is the main reason why I think the batch recording is necessary.
Right. No, that makes sense. Okay. So you're gonna have like a bunch in the bank,
yeah,
and then you're gonna launch on YouTube, and then what's the Instagram strategy?
So it's Instagram strategy is it feels a lot different in that most of the bike videos on Instagram are just entertainment, right? Or funny, or, you know, the videos are like, show us the reason why you don't have any money, you know? And it's like, in my case, there's 5 motorcycles lined up outside the garage, right? So I think the Instagram strategy might be slightly less educational and slightly more entertainment. But I think there's a place for the educational videos. I'm just not quite sure how that looks because I haven't seen a lot of it already, and not that I need to like copy somebody, but I'm not sure how to condense some set stuff in 30 seconds or 60 seconds.
There's a reason why I'm asking this question.
Okay.
I'm just asking you how you're going to repurpose your content, or is it just going to be like a distinct Instagram reel, let's say, and a distinct
it might be distinct
YouTube. Okay.
For me, the Instagram stuff is so easy to make and post that that doesn't feel like a hurdle in any way. I mean, I had an Instagram on my motorcycle channel, which has no followers, blow up, and it was literally buffing out the gas tank of the bike with a certain like Dr. Beasley's is like a car and motorcycle like wash thing. And that thing went berserk. Like, and I'm thinking it's literally a hand and a rag wiping down a gas. So that's the part where I'm like, okay, where does that need to go? Because I think that some of the stuff that I put it up there kind of as a joke. I just wanted to tag the brand and see what happened. And of course, they reposted it and stuff too. And that's the other nice thing is I think with motorcycle stuff, no brand is so big outside of like Ducati motorcycles or Triumph or Indian. Like the big motorcycle brands are big, but like the smaller brands will repost your stuff all the time. Like they...
Okay.
they're not so big that they're like, oh, we're not going to share this. Like, most of them share stuff.
Okay. And then would this Instagram Reel content then go on YouTube Shorts and
probably
TikTok?
Yeah.
Okay. So all that's going to be the same content? Like, the short form is...
I think so. For now, it is.
Okay.
Until I get more... I mean, like, I'm not crazy about what I can do. I mean, I usually am crazy about what I can do.
But you are. You're always very ambitious.
I am. Yeah. But I also know... Like, I know best practice-wise, they should probably be a little bit different. But I just like, I don't have the bandwidth for that.
So one YouTube video, how many posts for Instagram and
I think it'd be
TikTok?
Awesome if I could do three a week.
Three a week. Okay.
But I see, for me, I could do stories all day long.
Right. Yeah. Stories is where the conversions are. So I guess.
And the thing is with stories, and I'm sure people know this, but you don't have to post them. Like, Instagram doesn't mean instant anymore. You can get all sorts of footage for stories and post it whenever you want. I mean, there's not... Nobody knows.
Actually, you are a stories factory. So walk me through, because I can't do this for some reason. Like, are you just constantly filming whatever you're doing?
Oh, yeah. Like, when I go for a run, I film like 15 things when I'm running.
Okay.
Whatever, and obviously, like, running is weird because I run the same route a lot, which I don't like want people to know exactly the route I run. And so there's sometimes I'm like, well, I can't keep posting the same like yard because at some point someone's going to go on Google Earth and find it. But yeah, like, I try to do is like, if I'm, I mean, you know, I like to do a lot of remodeling. So like, if I'm at home, like, I will do video every time I'm at Home Depot. I'll do video every time I'm at Lowe's, floor and decor, like, just... It doesn't matter what it is. People love it. It's crazy to me. Like, people like I did this video the other day. So I got these new pans and they're called Scan Pan. They were at Williams Sonoma. Huge shout out. I don't know where else you can get them. You can probably get them on Amazon. And you don't have to use, they're like kind of Teflon-y, but not like the old school Teflon, I guess. So I'm not going to die of cancer or something. And like, I can make my omelets absolutely perfect in these pans. Like, it's just phenomenal, right? And I'm such a huge fan of them. So I was making breakfast the other day. I was like, oh, I think I'm going to take like a little video of me cooking in my Scan Pan. And I'm like, just put it up there. Scan Pan reposted it. Like, you know, anything that I see, you know, I haven't done my Halloween decorations yet. I keep thinking of doing it, but.
So this is like a habit.
Yeah, it's definitely a habit.
I can't get myself to do like, okay, you know me well.
Yes. The problem is your life is boring.
That's true.
I mean, and I don't mean that in a. I don't mean that in a negative way at all, but I find that on the days where I sit in front of the computer most of the day, I don't have anything to post because this is boring, right? Like, I could take a picture right now of us recording. I've done that. I do this a lot. Like, we'll do doing office hours, but that's basically the level I can get to when I'm sitting in front of the computer. But the second I leave my computer, I'm always like, oh, I should get that. Oh, that's funny. Oh, this is interesting. People will like this. Oh, my room's really clean. I'll take a picture of my made bed. People love pictures of made beds. Who knew? Yeah.
That sounds boring to me.
It is, but I think, honestly, people are like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I want like a clean slate too or something. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Because I'm not telling people to make their bed.
My life really is just like going to kids' events right now.
Yeah. And I know you don't like your kids on social media a lot, which is your other, not problem, but that's the other complication for you in that, like, my kids are all on social media. And aside from them having to vet the photos I take of them because, oh my God, I look so dumb and someone's going to find me in 5 years and see that photo. Because, side note, do you know what kids do these days when they meet somebody? They go to their parents' Instagram and Facebook and look for pictures of them as babies.
Really?
Yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes, okay. It's 100% a thing. So I have to, like, my kids are like, please take that photo down from 2011. I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm not taking the photo down. Like, this is my social media account and you approved it in 2011. I don't care if you were three.
So what else do? I go out to eat, I play Ultimate, and I play tennis.
People love food photos. People love food photos. I just watched I watched an Instagram reel the other day. A girl named Sammy Marquez. She's a big motorcycle rider. She has a big Instagram following. And she rides a bike in Boston. And that's her only transportation, I think. And so she made a video of like went to grab to my takeout lunch and forgot my backpack. So she's trying to balance this bag from like Chipotle on the top of the bike as she's riding, which is pretty hard to do. Like when you have, she has a sport bike, so she doesn't have any place to put it. And so like, but I watched it. I was like, that's kind of funny. Like, I don't know where I'd put a bag. Like I probably would tuck it in my jacket. I don't know. So
okay.
Like there's, I mean, you should, you, when you go out to eat, you should always, not you necessarily, but like people like food photos. They like photos of restaurants. They like.
I guess that's for personal brand stuff, I guess, right?
I think people would like to know what you're doing because people, like you're kind of mysterious.
I am?
Yeah. The other thing that I plan on doing too is resharing a lot of content from other motorcycle riders.
I see. Yeah. That's a... I guess the point is, I'm sure there's people listening to this. We're like, oh, I don't want to document all these things. So, like, how do I make Instagram work?
Then
like,
you
a
don't.
YouTube piece makes sense. But
then don't, you don't make Instagram work if you don't want
then
to
you don't make
everything.
Instagram work for you.
You can okay. have a curated... So, if you're a brand, if you're trying to sell products or digital products or course, you can have a very curated feed. My client does. Her feed is, like, nothing off the cuff. I don't love that idea. Like, that's not for me. I personally relate better to brands that show a real side of things as opposed to just curated photos and like picture, really nice pictures of their products. I get that. But for me, that's like, and I follow celebrities and I don't like, I don't follow a ton of celebrities, but the people that I do follow are the ones that share what I feel like are, I mean, they're probably very also curated, but they feel more natural than just, you know, here's my picture from Vogue. Here's my picture from GQ. Here's my whatever. Here's my movie premiere photo. Like, I like when they're like, oh, here's like one person I like to follow is Selma Blair. The one she's got MS.
Yeah,
I think.
Know Selma. She has MS.
MS. Which one's MS?
Multiple sclerosis.
She's MS. The one where you like can't walk for, like your muscles start to.
Selma Blair has that? I
yes.
didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's actually been very transparent with her journey, but she did a reel the other day or a TikTok or something where she showed how she puts makeup on, right? Because she has a lot of tremors. And so she has these tools that like, basically they're like a, almost like a knob that you like hold between your fingers so it's steadier. And she's like doing this like 3-minute makeup tutorial and she's gorgeous, right? Like she's beautiful without any makeup on. And she basically, I watched this whole thing and I'm like, well, I'm old. I'm kind of shaky. Like, maybe I'll buy these knobs. But like, to me, that was way more compelling than her just posting like a, oh, I'm in this TV show or whatever.
Right.
So I think people will relate to brands that show a little bit of their, you know, human side to it.
No,
it's like,
I,
why
well,
I think you should go to Bumblebee. And show people packing up orders and the embroider machine. Like, I think that's good
content. I totally agree with you, actually. But I only have the capacity to do so many videos. And I feel like if my wife wants to do that stuff, then that's great. But obviously, she's actually much less public than I am.
Yes.
With a lot of things. So, no, I completely agree with you. We call it humanizing the business, right?
Yes,
you always
humanizing.
Make fun of me for
make fun of each
that.
Other. It's fair. It's all fair.
Okay. All right. So YouTube, mm-hmm. Instagram, and then should we talk about the, is it okay to talk about the products?
Yeah.
How did you find what you were going to sell?
So I've spent a decent amount of time around people who ride motorcycles at this point.
Okay.
The past year or so. I spent a lot of time at the local motorcycle place. I've been to some motorcycle events. The nice, so what I found appealing about motorcycles is, or people that ride them, is that for a lot of them, this is like a very disposable income product, right? And so you don't just buy, like nobody just buys a motorcycle. They buy a motorcycle, they buy gear, they buy a helmet. Not everybody, most people buy a helmet. You buy stuff for your motorcycle. So you switch out, like I switched out my my brake and my clutch levers to ones that bend. So if the bike drops, they bend automatically. They bend like on purpose as opposed to bending and braking. People switch out their gas cap lids. People add little striping. So it's very much something that you don't just buy a motorcycle and ride it as is, unless you're probably 20, right? And then you buy all the like cool gear and pants and jacket and all that other stuff. So I felt like, okay, there's a market here for people to spend extra money it's kind of like with the jewelry thing. Like, people buy essential oils, but they'll buy accessories to the essential oils, which was the jewelry. Same thing with motorcycles. People buy motorcycles, they're going to buy accessories. So I just started like looking around. It's like, what are things that are like universal that people will buy? Because I didn't want to, like, initially, I don't want to get into, well, this only fits the Honda CB500 and this only fits the Harley, whatever. Like, that's definitely not something that I want to start out with, because it's really, it's like clothing, right? Too many sizes, too many different things. Now, down the road, is that something that I'm open to? Absolutely. So I thought, okay, I can show you this, but no one else will be. So these are really popular. So they're a keychain. They're a little embroidered.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So these are super popular. They sell well on Amazon. They're weigh absolutely nothing, obviously. And they have basically sayings on them that would be typical to motorcycle lingo.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, there's not a lot of competition. You know, they're easy to ship. They fit all the like check marks of your store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I started looking at things that fit, because there's so much to sell. I went with the checklist, like easy to ship, lightweight, small, lower price points, and then obviously cheap to manufacture. So, you know, anything that fit into that, then I started doing research. I started doing keyword research to see who owned the keywords on Ahrefs. So I used that tool. And then I used Jungle Scout to see what was selling on Amazon, who was selling it, what the average, you know, volume of sales was a month. And then I started looking at their stores off Amazon. So I kind of used all of that to make a decision of like, okay, we're going to go into market with like these 10 to 15 items and then obviously expand from there.
So your store is going to be populated with 10 to 15 items at the start?
10 to 15. So like the keychain that I just showed you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing, but you can get like 170,000 sayings on it, right? So maybe keychain will be one thing, but then maybe there'll be 10 varieties of the keychain.
Interesting. Okay. So you're starting with a wide variety of stuff.
No, I mean, I'm not having 100. Like, I think, so I just put in a sample order and I think I maybe got 10 to 12 sayings.
Okay.
Just to see
the
quality.
How many of each are you going to order? Just curious.
I don't know yet. This is where I'm not, this is my weakness, right? I'm not great at it. I'm not great at inventory. You know, when I did jewelry, I had inventory problems up the wazoo.
Well, you had inventory problems, meaning that you sold too quickly. So
I sold too quickly, but then I also had stuff I couldn't get rid of. I still have stuff I can't get rid of.
Right.
I'm going to see what the MOQs are on some of these things, because it's, you know, it's not always obvious right away when you start talking to people. I might do about 1,000 of each. That might be too aggressive, but I don't know.
I imagine those are really inexpensive, what you showed me. So it's probably not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Are you going to go on Amazon from the start?
I think so.
Okay. So the holidays are coming right around. Are you going to try to pull one of your $100,000 a month?
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to get I ordered some stuff, like, just what the hell. I don't know if it'll get here on time.
Let me ask you this then. What's your budget for this to start?
To start?
Yeah.
Oh. So I was thinking about trying to keep it under 5,000 to start, but I'll go up to 10.
Up to 10. Because I was thinking like motorcycle stuff, I guess it's for keychains and stuff, that's cheaper. But I remember, I would imagine the other accessories are a lot more expensive.
It's
like
funny.
Like even something simple that you said, like the gas cap, right?
Yeah. They're not that expensive.
They're not.
The markup on it is stupid. And I mean, I get it. It's kind of like a handbag, right? Have you ever watched those TikTok videos where it's like, why is a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the guy who cuts apart the.
Yes, cuts apart the handbag. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like this handbag maybe tops costs $40 to make, but it's being sold for $5,000 or $6,000.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I find this such an appealing niche, is because people are willing to pay a premium for these things because of what it is, right? It's like people know that if you want to replace your gas cap, you're going to pay like $70 for a gas cap or something absurd.
I see.
It's like, it's just metal. right? It's not, there's nothing like special about it. This is, you know, it's not made from anything better than the gas cap that was on your bike. It's just like, oh, you want a different design, or you want a flip cap, or who knows what it is. Yeah, like one of the things that people buy all the time, or which actually I think is something you have to buy if you own a motorcycle, is the kickstand plate. So all motorcycles have kickstands. A lot of them have one sided kick. So some of them have the ones that come like they're two sided. I don't know what the official term is. So
yeah,
you rock your bike up on it. But like my bike and all the bikes in my garage have one side, like a bicycle kickstand. But the problem is, if you're parked anywhere other than like really nice asphalt, it doesn't catch. It can like slide on the gravel a little bit. So they sell these discs basically that you literally just throw under your kickstand, and then it like makes a smooth flat surface for your kickstand to sit on. Super simple, right?
But how about this? How about when you get to a stoplight, these kickstands automatically come down so that your bike doesn't tip over, and then as soon as you start moving, it automatically retracts.
Yeah, so you know if your kickstand's down, you can't go.
Oh, okay.
Most of the time, your bike most bikes don't engage if your kickstand's down.
I'm just wondering if there's a market for that. That
I would like
that
as someone who's short. And struggles to touch
the ground.
Or be
like these little training wheels that come out.
Yeah, like. Yeah. So, and it's funny because I see people on bikes where their bikes are taller than mine and they're shorter than me. And they literally are like, they have to lean on one side to have a flat foot. And I'm like, I will never ride a bike like that because I don't want to, like I, especially in traffic, I want to be planted on the ground. And my feet don't plant on my bike. But this is how crazy things are though. You can buy a seat for my motorcycle that brings it down another half of an inch, which a half of an inch when you're on your tiptoes is huge, right? It takes you from toes to like ball of your foot.
Right.
So I almost got this bike, I mean, the seat for my bike. It was like $300. But
wow.
But for me, like the idea of like being a little bit steadier on the ground was, and we actually ordered it and then it was sold out. So I couldn't get it. But to me, the idea of being sturdier was worth the $300. So, but that's the thing. It's like, I didn't think twice about that. And I'm not like so rich that I can just go spend $300 on anything. But to me, it's like, well, that's like a safety issue, right? Like we ride in $1,000 helmets because we think they're the best helmets. So, and my boys have really expensive helmets, like, and I have an expensive jacket, like not because it's like, I want the brand. It's because, well, this has the body armor and all that stuff. So people spend money. And I think anyone who's looking to sell something, like I like the idea of being in a niche where people are willing to spend money.
Right.
And unlike certain niches where people are always looking to save money. Right.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, with your handkerchiefs, you're kind of in that niche as well, because usually, I mean, there's two types of people that get married, right? The people that are like, it's my wedding, I'm spending all this money, and then it's my wedding, I need to do everything from Pinterest on a budget. But there's definitely this group of people that are willing to spend. And like, when I know you guys do stuff for funerals too, it's like, people don't think about money usually at that point. They're just like, just do it, get it done. Like,
yeah.
So people aren't as price sensitive.
I guess the difference with us is that those are usually one-offs, whereas like once you have one of your customers, you could just sell them endless motorcycle stuff.
Well, and that's the thing that gets me probably the most excited, just because I spend so much time in email marketing now, is that I think I'm pretty good at email marketing. And so I feel like I've learned a lot of tricks, and they're not tricks, hacks, because I'm not tricking anybody into doing anything. Like I know how to keep a customer, I think, at this point, and I know how to keep them buying, and I hope to have enough different types of items that they'll just keep buying from me as opposed to somebody else.
Right.
And I think for a business, anything that you sell, whether it's digital or physical, if you can keep your customer coming back to you and buying from you, it's kind of one of the biggest issues we have with profitable audience. Not an issue, but like we sell one product, which is fine, for one price ever, lifetime. So once we get that person, like we don't make any more money from them, that's how we want to run the business. So it's not a problem, but it's not a business where we have to focus on. Our reason for focusing on retention is because success stories sell more courses.
I mean, there's reasons to go. Yeah.
You know,
obviously going with the recurring. Yeah, it's another. Obviously going recurring is always generally better.
But I think in the product world, you really don't want to sell one-offs. if you can help it. You want to try to find things that you can continue to sell to people, whether it's a consumable product or a product where people will buy this and then they'll buy, you know, once you buy your first Lego set, you're buying another 100 Lego sets before your kid ages out.
You know, here's something I've just noticed since we're talking about courses is that I'm always adding to the class. We always add to Profitable Audience also. What I found is like anytime a new tool comes out that I use, I talk about it and then people actually sign up for it too.
Yeah.
So in fact, it is like getting a customer. It's retaining them. Except, and it's just kind of unintentional, I guess. You know,
yeah, we're not trying to sell anybody anything in the course when we talk about stuff that we use.
Yeah.
So. If they want to try it and use it, that's great. If they want to find something different or better that they think is better, that's fine too. But I think in the physical product world, you want to figure, especially if you're paying to acquire those customers.
Right.
You know, it's hard to just get them on a one and done.
All right. So I guess we'll have to save the big reveal for a separate episode. But do you have any sales goals for this holiday season?
I don't, because I don't know if I'm going to get any product.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's already late in the game. It's already November almost.
And I'm also trying to liquidate all my jewelry. So I also have that on my plate, like where I'm actually really focused on getting rid of that. So my overall, like I will feel successful in this is if by January 1st, like we're ready to go.
Got it.
Obviously if I can throw some stuff up before then, that's like a bonus win. But to me, like, especially because it's the holiday season and there's just a lot of other things going on. Like if all the channels are up, if the videos are ready to go, like all of that by January 1st, which I feel like is still like that's just 2 months away. That's not a long time to do all of that. I think that would be a huge victory.
Well, I hope you enjoy that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.